The VADA committee is oversight committee is called to order. The clerk, please call the roll.
Good morning, Commissioner Baker.
Here.
Commissioner Bates.
Here.
Commissioner Campos.
Present.
Commissioner Glover, absent. Commissioner Luce.
Here.
Commissioner Sartipi, absent. Commissioner Schaefer, absent. Commissioner Tissier.
Here.
Commissioner Wiener.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, please rise and join me in Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Can we have the commencement announcement, please?
As authorized by state law, I am making the following announcement. Each member of the board here today will be entitled to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum of $500 per month per agency. This amount is provided as a result of convening a meeting for which each member is entitled to collect such amount.
Thank you very much. So now our first item of business is a consent calendar. The consent calendar is before us. I entertain a motion.
So moved.
Moved by Tissier. Is there a second?
Second.
By Campos. Is there any discussion or debate? Okay. Anybody object to us being voted unanimously? Seeing none, so that passes unanimously. The next item is item number 5, which is a program update and contract action. And Carol Crunch is going to present that to us.
Good morning, Commissioners. Carol Kuster, Director of Electronic Payments. The first item really covers three separate topics that are follow-ups to information that we have presented to you previously. This item covers fast-track customer service center performance, the role of Jacobs, the technical advisor, in supporting the fast-track customer service center work, and more information at your request about credit card fees and how those play into the overall cost of collecting tolls through fast-track. So on the first item, this slide is included in your packet. And as you recall, we've been here several times over the last couple of months to update you on the upgrade to a new back-end system to support fast-track accounts. This complicated graph shows the ups and downs that we've had in call center performance. And the big split or change is really in November of 2014. Everything prior to November 14 was on the old back-end system. And in November, we upgraded to a new back-end system and also changed some of the contractual key performance measures that the contractors required to meet. So the good news here is that although in November you see that the line for meeting standards was quite low, it is moving in the right direction and creeping upward. This is all related to the call answering performance standards, and the standard in the current contract is that 95% of calls are to be answered within 3 minutes. Moving on to the next slide, this provides a little bit more detail about just what it is that impacts call answering time and call wait time. The two factors really are talk time, that's the amount of time it takes to resolve a concern once we've got a customer on the phone, and wait time. Those are what impact call answering standards. So the bars here represent customer wait time, which as you can see in November went up very high, and in January the wait times were around 8 minutes. The good news is that those wait times are coming down. So in February the wait time dropped to about 3 minutes, and in March so far I'm happy to report that the call wait times are about 25 seconds. So on any day other than a Monday when call volumes are a little higher, fast track customers are essentially getting their calls answered immediately. The line across this chart represents talk time, and that's the amount of time it takes to resolve concerns once a customer is on the line with a representative. And that is still a challenge at the customer service center. Some of the back-end system screens are still taking a lot of time to navigate, so the average talk time is still around 5 minutes. We are in receipt of a corrective action plan from Xerox, And they have committed that based on that plan, they'll be able to be in compliance with all of the key performance indicators in the contractual standards by the end of this month, March. So we're obviously monitoring that very closely, but we're seeing trends in the right direction at this point. I should add that we noted last month, and I will mention again, that based on the contractual penalties that we're allowed to assess, we are collecting from Xerox $550,000 in penalties through the month of February. So that, we think, has had its intended impact. Our Xerox contractor counterparts tell us that they are feeling that pain and that that's a lot of what's generating the responsiveness that we're starting to see at this point. So with that, I'll move on to the second part of this item, which is this committee had some questions about the role of Jacobs Engineering in delivering the Regional Customer Service Center. There's detailed information in your packet about the various roles that they have played for us, which are very typical for how we use technical advisor contractors. In specific, I should point out that Jacobs really did help shepherd the move to the new system. Noted here is that they were back east in Germantown, Maryland, at Xerox's facilities overseeing testing. And additionally, they were part of the group that recommended some of these stringent penalties related to key performance indicators that I just mentioned earlier. So I'm happy to take any additional questions about that. We noted in the item that staff is taking updates and discussing other potential contractual remedies with the Fast Track Management Group, and I'm not sure if that's a group that's ever been mentioned here before. That group is comprised of our executive director and the executive director of Golden Gate, Dennis Mulligan. So we just met with them recently, and we are busy documenting in writing our concerns about performance and our expectations for improvement. And we'll be continuing to talk to that Fast Track Management Group about other actions that might be necessary. And so finally, the third portion of this item in your packet is an attempt to clarify or answer some questions that were raised at the January BATA-O meeting. So at the January meeting, this committee had a lot of questions about clarifying the credit card processing fee portion of the Fast Track program. So the slide that you have in front of you, and that's on the screen, is really an attempt to very simply break down what we pay in credit card processing fees. And I should point out that every merchant pays such fees. We're no way unique in that regard. But just to break it down very simply, the first box here shows that when a credit card is used to add, and we just used $100 as a kind of easy amount to do the math on, when a credit card is used to add $100 to a Fast Track account, there is a fixed fee portion, a processing fee, that is about 10 cents per transaction. And then once that fee moves through the credit card network and goes to the customer's credit card, there's an interchange fee that's approximately 2% that is also a fee that BATA pays. So what this diagram is showing is the fees that are incurred when credit card users load value to their account. The total cost is about 2.1% of the transaction. That is on par with industry standard. I can tell you on Clipper, those fees are about 2.2%, and they've traditionally been about 2%. So for every $100 that a customer uploads to their or moves to their account via a credit card, BATA gets a net of $97.90. The credit card fees are a relatively big component of overall cost of the Fast Track program. They're the second biggest cost after the cost of the customer service center. But as I say, they are a relatively fixed cost and a cost of doing business. I think I'll just pause there because I've covered a lot of material. Maybe I can take questions at this time. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee members? Mark, did you want to, Mark?
Yes. Actually, this is just a little bit of feedback relevant. I had to update my credit card this last month, and so I just discovered a few things trying to navigate the system. And one is, I could be wrong about this, but what I understood was basically our hours are 8 to 5 in terms of getting a call response. And, of course, I'm usually dealing with this in the evening when you get the mailer that you need this information, and and 8 to 5 is generally not when I'm available to actually deal with it. So it seems that having call periods outside of that 8 to 5 bracket would be useful, particularly in the evenings. Second thing was I went to the web to try and solve the problem and ask for a PIN number. Well, you know, I do this every couple of years. I guess several times I'd never guessed right in terms of what my PIN number was. Seems like if you're going to set this up, there ought to be something more familiar, like your mother's maiden name or some question that people can get through that they're likely to remember. Because the PIN number stopped me cold as far as using the website. And then finally, after several attempts on the phone, I was able to navigate and update my card, but it wasn't. Several times I thought I couldn't do it, but I finally realized after a few attempts I could. So it wasn't obvious by the questions and how they were answered that you could actually get there without assistance and a PIN number. So ultimately I was able to do it over the phone without talking to anyone, but I think there are several things there that would help us reduce our call volume if we just had actually more hours to respond to that, and then make the internet a lot easier to use for somebody who's probably only going to log on every couple of years. So
do you want to respond to that?
Commissioner?
I mean, I can say a couple of things to that. First of all, I sympathize. The password madness that we encounter every time we have to manage an account is really difficult. The good news, though, or what I'd like to point out, is that we do have some limited Saturday hours, so those are outside the 8 to 5 work week. But you're right. The idea is that we want our customers to be able to do their business on the phone without assistance and on the web. The website, having to go through a web password retrieval process, can be time-consuming and difficult. But the website is significantly improved, we believe, over what we had in the old system. It's cleaner. It puts up right up front the most common transactions that people require. So it's a work in progress, and everybody has their preferences for interacting differently. But if you don't mind, maybe we'd like to just talk to you afterwards and hear a little bit more about, especially
sure,
the interaction with the
FBI. It was just, again, the PIN number was what stopped me, because you know, I guess several numbers that I typically use and they weren't right. I don't know if I've ever actually had a right PIN number. So, and just my experience with sites that you only go to ever so often to have some questions common to you know, mother's maiden name or something that, right, that people typically can remember, be a lot more practical way to allow somebody to get through.
Commissioner Haggerty?
Thank you. And I apologize if you covered this before I walked in. When we talk about the credit card processing fees, I think when you look at that graph before us, you think that's not much. But what is it like on a yearly basis? How much of that is affecting us?
So the credit card processing fees are increasing proportional to the amount of new fast track accounts that we have, which are on the rise, and the amount of transactions that go through. So it's not disproportionately rising, but because the number of accounts and credit card transactions.
But how much does that equal? I mean, how much?
Oh, it's about $13 million a year.
That's ridiculous. So let me ask you this. You know, I come from, whenever I negotiate something, it's always based on value or volume. And I would guess that we're probably a pretty high volume customer. Mm-hmm. And if we're with somebody that wants to take those kind of fees from us, or a corporation that feels that they need to take $13 million a year from us to process, you know, these credit cards, should we not go to another banking institution and say, look, we're not going to pay this much. We need a better price, and we should shop it just like we bid construction projects.
We have
maybe the $2 fee,
correct,
the interchange fee, is standard.
That's right.
But maybe the 10-cent fee is not. And it's amazing to me to know that really that 10-cent fee gets up somewhere around $13 million.
Commissioner, maybe your CFO might have a couple of thoughts on that, because he and I have tossed this around a bit, and we certainly agree that we don't like the position we're in. As Carol indicated, we've got a lot of company. This is the credit card world. This is how they make their money. But, Brian, maybe you have a couple thoughts.
Let me try a couple of things. First of all, you're absolutely right. The 10-cent fee doesn't add up to $13 million. Basically, we have a bid with Bank of America. They call Bank of America Merchant Services. Those are the people that you think of that say, If the volume goes up, you get a discount. And, in truth, you do. On that component of the fee, on the 10 cents. Now, behind Bank of America Merchant Services are the people that they process to, the individual banks, American Express, Visa, MasterCard. They charge their own fees. We don't have a bid with those credit card companies. You might have noticed in the papers lately, for example, American Express has lost the Costco account because they could not negotiate the fees directly.
Right.
We do not negotiate directly with banks. We leave that up to the interbank service because the idea, and it is an option you have, but it is a very difficult option because then you would have four or five different interfaces to your bank and different things to reconcile and control. It's a very difficult process. The state of California has a little bit of different approach, which American Express has signed into. So they have an agreement that limits these fees. But basically, our agreement is with Bank of America Merchant Services. That's the 10 cents. That adds to about $750,000 a year. The rest of it is what is passed through from the individual credit card companies, and there your options are somewhat limited.
Okay. So you can go, I totally understand that. And let me tag on that for a minute because I use almost American Express exclusively. And really for one reason, and it's because my wife likes it because I have to pay it off every month. I don't get to carry a debt. So
that's right.
I understand what you're talking about, American Express, because sometimes I will go to use it and, sorry, we don't take it. So along those lines, what percentage of our business is American Express?
Oh, MasterCard and Visa are predominant.
Russ?
Any
guess?
American Express maybe about between 10% and 20%.
Right. Well, yeah, and are they the biggest offender when it comes to I guess I would call them the backdoor fees?
Well, let me. Unfortunately, the answer to that question is no, because while American Express, if you were a merchant, commissioners, as we are when we process, we're actually just, to those credit card companies, we're just a merchant. Normal merchants hate American Express because their fees go from 3 to 4%, whereas MasterCard and Visa, particularly Diner's Card, negotiate a little lower. They tend to be 2 to 3%, again, depending on the customer. However, in the state of California, they have an agreement with state of California GSA to limit their costs. There, so we actually see a lower charge from American Express, which is roughly about 15% of our business, and we actually see higher costs from the other guys because they do not have interchange agreements with the state of California, and that's because they're not on their P cards. So it is something to think about. It's certainly something. There are a number of major operators, ourselves, Texas, Chicago, New York. We have had a lot of discussions as to whether we should band together as a band of group and say, look, enough is enough. If you're going to band together with the state of California and we are a good piece of business, maybe you should limit fees to us. But it is a work in progress.
It seems to me that, and I won't beat this horse, and thank you, Mr. Chair, but it seems to me that we would be better off having kiosks and major transit hubs and saying, look, if you pay cash, we'll give you a couple free trips or something. For us, that would be better than paying all these fees, but there's got to be something better.
And then you'd exchange that for a vault and individuals counting cash. So there's no easy way here. And the world is going electronic.
Commissioner, The reason that we've joined these items in part was we didn't want to tell you about Jacobs 1 month and then come back the next month and say we want to give them more work and count on you forgetting, right? We just wanted to show it all to you now. But this other piece of work that's on the agenda is the question of should we on the bridges continue to collect cash and credit card, right? Fast track. Because as you see in the memo, they both cost about the same. So right now we've got, in a way, the worst of both worlds. We've got the costs of a cash system and the costs of an automated toll system. So that's why the other item is before you. And in terms of cost savings, I think that's probably the long-term future, is whether or not we could figure out how to get one system and pay for one instead of two.
Okay. Commissioner Campos?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, staff, for the presentation. I really appreciate the additional information as to the role of Jacobs. I understand the point, and so the question for me is, knowing that we are stuck for the time being, what are the specific things that we can do, the steps that we can take to continue to pursue this long-term strategy of minimizing fees? Is it something where we have to maybe approach the state to see if they can approach some of these credit card companies? Is there something where we should band together, as you noted, with some of these other jurisdictions? Unless we actually have a very concrete strategy, the status quo will remain. The players involved have no reason to, you know, sort of change the status quo. So I'm just wondering if you can give us a sense of sort of what the steps would be and what the timeline for those steps.
Well, first step is to control your costs, and we do that by limiting the number of times we hit the credit card account. So that takes, that's the one piece that we do, and that's done well. As for the rest of it, yes, the state of California certainly, the state of California, as far as I know, has approached the other credit card companies, and they've gotten, there really hasn't been anything happening there, but it is an ongoing discussion. I think among the five or six major transit operators, Texas, Chicago, New York, us, and Southern California, we have a active group, and I think we're going to try to do something a little more formal. The hard part is each state has different laws about credit cards and credit card processing and how to lay a bid out that would limit certain things. And so that's going to take a little more work on our parts, but it is something we're actively pursuing because I think we're all in the same position, especially if you look at whether you like it or not, the world is going electronic, which means our costs in that area are going to go up, and which means as they go up, I mean, the air is human. To really lose money, to really have a tough time with things, you go electronic. That means your controls are different, your recoveries are different, the way you manage becomes completely different, and all of us who form this one committee, we know that. We know that it's coming. We know the way the world's going to go, and we feel that controlling the costs and actually controlling the internal controls in advance, especially between the interbanks, is going to be an important part of the future. How long it'll take, I would think a year or two to really find a common ground to do it. Within California, we might be a little faster because we're bigger, with the exception of Texas and New York.
Thank you. I think it would be helpful. Perhaps maybe in a few months we can come back to see where things are. And in terms of the state of California, I don't know exactly who at the state is in charge of looking into this. But if there is anything in terms of advocacy that we can do, I think that's something that we should pursue. But I appreciate the work.
We've been talking to Department of Finance, but we'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, this is an information item. Yes, Commissioner Farron.
Has there been any consideration of passing this cost on to the credit card user? I just recently purchased something, and they said, you're using your credit card, it's cost this. If you're paying cash, it costs this. And so, you know, they're charging me to use the credit card.
Commissioner, that's probably part of a broader subject that we ought to bring back to you when we return with the information Commissioner Campos was asking about. We tend to go light on our customers compared to a lot of other toll authorities around the country, ranging from penalties to, you know, we don't make them pay for the toll tag. I mean, all kinds of things. So the short answer is we probably could.
I would like, when you bring it back.
But I think that also is going to be a question of how are people going to react to that.
And I understand, but I mean, this is a real cost. It's
$8 million,
and it's a convenience to me to be able to use that credit card. And I agree with Commissioner Hackerty. You have a place where you have an alternative. You can go and pay cash if you want, or we use.
Yeah,
credit
see,
card.
That's the place I have to say. When Commissioner Hackerty mentioned that, it was almost a shudder over here.
Well, don't waste time discussing it now. But I would like that option to be considered. The one about
cash is customer. What we're trying to move away from, not toward.
I understand that,
and I know it looks like we're being gouged here, and frankly, we are. And as Brian mentioned, you can help cure the problem by raising the amount when people's cards renew, right? We've lowered it. That's another way that we're trying to be lighter on the customer. But the problem is that only saves you the transaction processing fee. That doesn't help you on the interchange fee, which is where the big abuse is.
Okay, well, thank you. So I gather it's an ongoing discussion. Is there any – when would you say you would be some kind of report back or some more information?
Why don't you give us a few months? So maybe in the fall we could come back to you. Andy sits on a group that's the California equivalent of the national association we belong to. So believe me, when you go to conferences, this is like several panels about this subject.
Okay, we'll expect some kind of ongoing report. Let me just ask an off-the-wall question. Is there any way we could join with the state of California?
We do that on all kinds of procurements, so I think we should consider that, and I'm sure Brian will be exploring that, because the state very often, because of their bargaining power, can cut a better deal than we can.
Sure, I think that would be...
In fact, you actually are. With American Express, you actually are part of the state agreement. If the state would sign more agreements, we'd be in better shape. Unfortunately, Visa, MasterCard have not shown an interest. Just far more volume.
Okay, thank you. So, again, this is an information item. We have another item now. Staff will take up this action item.
That's right, Commissioner. That was an information item, but we do have a second item. And I'm going to advance the slide here. This second item requests the committee's approval to enter into a two-year contract with Jacobs Engineering Group in the amount of $450,000 to analyze the operational status at the 7 state-owned bridges and provide recommendations for improvement. So the goals of the project really are to reduce toll collection and operating costs, just what we've been talking about here, to also explore where there are opportunities for decreasing congestion and travel times, and also where there are opportunities to increase customer convenience, motorist safety, and air quality. The impetus for this study really is that the Golden Gate Bridge, as you know, transferred to all-electronic tolling in March of 2013, and we now have sufficient data from the experience on that bridge that it's really time for us to do our due diligence and to see whether alternatives such as all-electronic tolling might have application on the 7 state-owned bridges. There are no predetermined outcomes here. Something that might be successful for one agency isn't necessarily a cookie-cutter solution for another agency. What's listed on this slide here in front of you is really what the purpose of this study is. So as I've been saying, the study will conduct traffic and financial impact analyses on a bridge-by-bridge basis. We'll take a look at the lessons learned through the Golden Gate all-electronic tolling implementation, and it really specifically to assess their relevance for the state-owned bridges. We'll take a very deep dive, specific look at each of the facilities and the existing tolling technology and the balance between fast-track and cash lanes, and we'll develop a proposed implementation plan for each bridge, including things like civil improvements. And we'll also take a look at for any of the strategies that are proposed. We also have to factor in how the public would accept any changes to the status quo, how we would communicate about changes to the public, and how we would make sure that the customer service strategies would be in place so that we wouldn't repeat mistakes of the past and be unprepared for potential customer confusion or increases in questions and concerns. So that's really the purpose of the study. We did conduct a competitive procurement. An RFP was issued in September. We received 3 responses. They were all similar in cost, and they all gave us evidence that they could perform the work. Jacobs Engineering was selected really because their proposal demonstrated the most effective approach to delivering the project, and they offered qualified key personnel in comparison to the other bidders. There's additional detail in your materials, but I think with that I'll stop. And we are asking, we are recommending that this committee authorize our executive director or his designee to negotiate and enter into this contract with Jacobs Engineering to complete this electronic toll evaluation on the Bay Area bridges in an amount not to exceed $450,000.
Commissioner Campos?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the information. This is a really dumb question, but I was wondering if you could explain what the difference between the $250,000 that we approved last time and this is in terms of what actually happens on the ground?
Not a dumb question at all. The $250,000 that were approved last time were for a wholly different contract. That contract, although with the same firm, which is not atypical, was to make sure that Jacobs would have the capacity to continue their work supporting the Fast Track Customer Service Center monitoring and improvements. For example, we talked moments ago about how the talk time on the calls at the Customer Service Center is still 5 minutes, which is long. Jacobs' staff are at the Customer Service Center and working closely with Xerox to look at system changes in the existing software that could be made to make the calls more efficient. That's one set of work. This is a wholly new and separate study, and was conducted, it's not an add-on to any existing contract we have at Jacobs. It's a wholly new request for proposals.
Okay, I guess those are some of my concerns, too, was they've been actually overseeing Xerox, and Xerox, is, as we know from the demonstration, has not done well. So, but you're confident that they're capable of doing this kind of work and capable of being doing it on time and giving us the correct information we need. Obviously, you recommended them, but still, there's that concern around with the Xerox. What do you say about that? Other than what you just made the comments to Compost about, are they on the case? Are we seeing improvements? Are they making a difference in the contract and their performance in the contract?
Yes, they are on the case, and they are making improvements in the performance of the contract. And this work is actually quite different. It is more analytical. It does have civil components. It is a fresh look. I do think in some ways, and in many ways, I think that the closeness that Jacobs has to our customer service center is a bonus here, because I think a danger in a project like this is potentially to be enamored by new technology or to think that, to look at some of the strategies without considering the customer impact. And I think there's really no danger of Jacobs being in that situation, since they have lived and breathed with us some of the impacts on the customer service center.
Okay.
I don't know, Jeff, do you want to speak further to the selection of Jacobs? Jeff Gerbrecht is the project manager and was involved in the selection directly.
Yeah, Jeff Gerbrecht, BATA staff. We did have three firms provide proposals, and the two, as you saw in your memo, the scoring was very close, but I think that what really pushed it to Jacobs was exactly what Carol just mentioned, is that not only did they have qualified individuals with 20-plus years of tolling experience to perform the task, but also their experience with the CSC was definitely a factor in choosing them.
Okay, thank you. Christopher Campbell.
Just a quick note. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I certainly will support staff's recommendation, but I probably would have seen it differently, in the sense that to the extent that the new work, you want to have a fresh perspective, is there a benefit to actually having someone different coming in? You know, there's always the fear that, are there limitations in terms of how far Jacobs can go, because they themselves were involved in the product that's being reviewed, if you will. I trust that staff knows that, but that's certainly a concern for me.
Yeah, okay. We agree. And just one more point is that the PM for this project does not have any experience on with the CSC. It's the QA/QC part that the personnel on the existing contract will be. And so the financial person is actually not included in this as well. So there's a wide breadth of experience throughout the country that's going to be providing assistance with this.
Well, on that note, maybe to our council, through the chair, is there an ethical wall that's being required of staff, so that there is, objectivity and there is no mixing, if you will, of potential, interests that may differ? Just if you can address that.
I'll have to get back to you on that, Commissioner.
Well,
if I might mention just one other thing, each of the firms that proposed is working on other projects for us. We're a big employer, so I just make that note.
Okay. One of the firms you disqualified, though, right? You only eliminated down to two, and you really analyzed just two, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Okay, well, I feel confident with the staff recommendation. So I'd entertain a motion to. Okay, moves there a second?
Second.
Okay. Okay, moved in second. Is there any more discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there an opposition to voting unanimously? Okay, seeing none, so we will vote. That will pass unanimously. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now we have public comment. We have one speaker, Ken Bukowski. I'd like to make a public comment.
Hello, my name is Ken Bukowski, and I record all these meetings, and they're on regional-video.com. I was wondering what the process is to get your minutes to include a link to the videos. I think would be very useful to the public. ABAG does it, and I don't see why you guys can't do it. So I'd like to urge you to put a link in your minutes to the videos that I record. It's free and should be done. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second by Liz. Okay, we'll vote unanimously. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.